Let's get into the business of board games. Hello, and welcome to Board Game Times, the podcast about the people, places, and events making tabletop gaming great in Chicago. I'm your host, Clark Bender, and in a moment I'll be talking to Danielle Reynolds, a game designer, graphic designer, and all-around expert in the field of publishing and playtesting board games. Great person to talk to if you want to find out more about the board gaming industry. This is the third episode of Board Game Times. If you missed the first two, please go back and check them out. It is early June, so I hope you've all had a chance to get outside and enjoy the weather. But, of course, I hope you've all also had a chance to play some games, whether it's tabletop games and RPGs, minis, you name it. I've been playing some games of Brass Birmingham with my gaming group, and I gotta say, it's a real blast. I don't know if you've ever played it before or not. Kind of a crunchy economic simulation where you're building various industries in 19th century England, building railroads as well as those industries, and there's just a lot of really interesting interplay between the opponents where resources you build can be used for your projects but also for their projects. That's not necessarily bad because when they use your resources, you get rewarded for it. A lot of really interesting decisions, a lot of different directions to go. Check it out, Brass Birmingham, definitely a little bit on the heavier side. A lot of cool decisions. What have you been playing? Let me know. In the meantime, let's get to this week's interview with Danielle Reynolds. I know you're going to find it fascinating. She has got a lot to say about the industry, and I hope you enjoy it. I am joined today by Danielle Reynolds, and I don't even know how to describe Danielle because she is so multi-talented and doing so many different things. I first discovered her through an online design group, but have since learned that she's not just running that group. She's also a designer. She's also working in the industry. She's also volunteered for all sorts of stuff and mentored people, and she has a podcast. So thank you, Danielle Reynolds. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
First of all, let's just kind of get to know you a little bit. Tell me about Danielle. Where are you from? Where are you now? And then we'll start talking about gaming.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm originally from Flagstaff, Arizona. I grew up there. Then I switched over to the Chicagoland area for college, and I was there about 8 years. And then currently moved over to the East Coast to start a job at GPI. They are a game manufacturing company. I work as a project coordinator there.
Confession I have to make, even though this is a podcast aimed at Chicago, Danielle does not live in Chicago anymore, but she's emeritus, I think, because she did so much stuff in Chicago and she's still working on an online design group in Chicago. So we'll talk about that some more. So, you know, I think we can extend you the courtesy of being an honorary Chicagoan here.
Thank you.
Don't need to worry about it. Yes, exactly. So tell me about your gaming background. Did you game as a child? Did your family game? How did you kind of get into gaming in general?
So we did definitely do the family games like Loaded Questions, Catchphrase, the party stuff. And then we had one of our family friends that had all those games that they were more hobby-esque, like Cathedral, Othello, Office Clue used to be one of my favorites when I was younger. A bunch of fun little games that you didn't really see on store shelves back then. So they kind of got me into the gaming. And it wasn't until 2017, 2018 time that I really jumped into like the hobby gaming. And kind of how that happened was I was at C2E2, which is a Comic-Con in Chicago. I'm a huge comic book nerd. And I showed up there with one of my coworkers who ended up ditching me in this huge convention hall. Like think a Gen Con size, it's huge. And I was cosplaying as Mary Marvel in a black suit, which anyone who's seen the Shazam movie knows who she is. And then I start talking to this Canadian entertainment company called Blind Fairy Entertainment. And they took pity on me because they're like, oh, those boots are pretty high. I was like wearing like these stiletto boots. And so they told me to take a seat. It was very hospitable and nice. And this guy comes up and he's like, you're in my seat. But he was just like making fun of me. Like he was teasing. And his name was Ryan Costello. And he actually was in charge of board game Bento back in the day. It was a subscription box that ran for a few years for anyone who participated in that or knew about it. But I ended up just talking to him. And at the time I worked at Fujifilm Graphic Systems. And so we kind of had this agreement where I like helped create the graphics for their booth. They saved a crazy amount of money for anyone who has ever run a booth or paid for a booth. And they got me tickets to go to the Gen Con. I had like one of their exhibitor badges. So I got to attend for the first time in 2018. And on my drive home, going from Indianapolis to Chicago, I just like was so inspired by going to Gen Con and seeing all these awesome designs that I wrote down like a ton of different things. Like I kept clicking the little speak button on my car and doing the notes, and the notes were a hot mess when I got home. But I created my first game, Nutstash, then. And like ever since then, I've just been like games, 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 and anything and everything related.
That is so great. What an amazing experience. So literally like just a few years ago, you kind of don't even know what the board game, the big board game hobby is all about.
I had no idea.
And now you're knee deep in it. That is so cool.
I thought you had to work for Hasbro to be a game designer. I literally just only thought that, and there was no other way.
Had you still been toying around with that before then? I mean, are you the kind of person who like, you know, played games in the past and kind of made up your own games? Or was this literally like you went to Gen Con, you got inspired, and all of a sudden you're designing games?
So I definitely did the home rules to a bunch of different games. And I remember in elementary school, I made a Digimon game because I had a bunch of these really tiny Digimon characters. And I just like drew on a board. And I think my mom might still have it. If I ever see it, I'll take a picture of it. It'll be perfect for, I don't know, social media.
Nice.
But yeah, no, I forced all my friends during recess to play this random game. So it's like, and then I made like a Tiddlywinks game that was a Spider-Man version. So it's like I made little games throughout my life. So I've always been creative. But yeah, it was mostly because of that Gen Con that my brain was like, this is perfect. It utilizes every skill I have. I want to do this and try it. And I did.
Have you thought about what made it click for you at Gen Con?
That's a good question. I guess just seeing the variety of games. Not to say that a lot of gamers are socially awkward, and I am a nerd myself. Like I love superheroes, but just seeing these people interacting and getting so into it and like just seeing the expressions, it was just like a totally different vibe. And I kind of played off that energy. So not only this energy, but seeing these games, I was like, okay, there's graphic designers, illustrators, rulebook writer. Like you have all these different elements that go into it. And I had like most of those skills. So I was like, hey, why not give it a shot? I mean, what worst case I don't succeed and it's just fun little hobby that I do on the side. What's the worst case when you try? You fail?
Sure.
Oh, well, you're not really failing.
So like up to that point, what did you think you were going to be doing when you grew up, in quotes?
My dream job when I was younger was to be a comic book illustrator or just honestly work anywhere with like DC Comics or Marvel Comics. I would have done anything. I would have fetched coffee and I would have thought my life was made.
So you come back from that Gen Con, you're getting jazzed. How does that change your gaming?
So I had a decent amount of games at the time, just because I liked playing games in college. They always called it pulling a Danielle, where I'd invite a crazy amount of people to something to play games. But I just kept bugging Ryan. I was like, look, Ryan, this is something I want to do. And since he worked Board Game Bento, when I went to Montreal, he gave me a crap ton of games that they just had left over from it. So I played through all of those. I went on like those meetup apps to find local board game groups, which is also how I found the game design groups. And so followed those, started to make a few friends that were a little bit more like gamer nerdy. And then I started listening to like podcasts like the Dice Tower and Board Game Design Lab and just listening to different games that I thought might interest me. And I kind of went through that cyclone of just buying up games and playing them. And just, I'm sure everyone's kind of done. My collection went zero to hero very quick. Like it was embarrassing. It took up like the whole guest room. It was pretty bad.
So what kind of games are you playing around this time while you're designing your first game? What sort of games are you playing yourself?
Literally everything. I am the perfect person to introduce to any game because I am willing to learn it all.
Okay.
I will say though, I prefer to not play games that last longer than 2 hours because I'd rather play a lot of smaller games versus one epic stretch of 6 hours.
Gotcha.
But that's just because I am a very busy person and it's easier to fit in smaller games. But I do like heavier games. Mm-hmm. I'm not as big of a war game person. I've tried. Same with RPGs, like getting the same group together has always been very difficult for me. But I'm always willing to try just about any game. And honestly, because I know the best way to design is to play other designers' games. So like I made it a goal to try to play like 3 new games a week.
Wow.
My ex was not a fan of this goal. Got pretty tired pretty quick.
So talk me about your experience designing your first game.
So my first game, I tried to self-publish. It was on Kickstarter, and it was at that moment where it was either going to barely fund or not fund. So I pulled it, and it was a great learning experience. I learned that I never want to do that again. Because as much as I thought I had done enough preparation for it, there was no way. Like at that point, a few people knew me, local people knew me, but not the industry itself. And I didn't realize at the time that, you know, only specific types of games do well on Kickstarter. So that game was geared towards like kids, family, cards, dice. I mean, it was inspired by Egyptian rat screw meets like Tenzi. So it was not a difficult game. It was just a very, it was also real time, which as we know, a lot of gamers are not a fan of.
Right.
But it was very cute, high energy, super fun. And I'm glad it was like my first design because it's like a little baby and I learned a lot from it.
So did Nutstash ever go anywhere? Did you ever get it published or do something with it yourself?
I ended up pitching it around and it actually still is getting pitched around a bit. God, I was too upfront with everybody. I just like came up to publishers without any experience.
So how did that go? I mean, were you just getting by on being bold, or was that kind of something somebody had told you, like just go up and ask? How did you pitch that?
So I made all the mistakes first time designers do. They try running that Kickstarter without doing, I mean, I did research, but not enough research.
Sure.
And then I definitely did the thing where you're supposed to reach out to the publishers before conventions. And, you know, a lot of them have set up calendars where you can just like sign in. I didn't do that. I walked up to them and said, hey, my name is Danielle Reynolds. I have a sell sheet. I have a game. Are you available for me to pitch to you? Weirdly enough, it actually worked with a decent amount of publishers. I don't know how that happened. Don't do that. If you're a designer, do not do that. Get on their mailing list. Go on their websites. Most of them have submission forms. They will post when they're looking for pitches. Do whatever they say in the post that they put. Do not do what I did. Do not just walk up to publishers because they are very busy. Yeah,
learn from Danielle's mistakes. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, thankfully, I did it at a less busy show. Gen Con is the worst if you're trying to just walk up to a publisher. Do your research ahead of time. I always do like a month or two in advance reaching out to publishers.
So you had that experience.
Yep.
You continue to design a lot of other games. How has your design process changed from that first game?
Good questions. So honestly, I still go by the same. If I have an idea, I write it down. But I found the best way for me to design is to just like make a prototype and play test it right away, see what works. Mm-hmm. And some of it is going to fail very epically. And then some is going to be okay. But since I'm a part of so many design groups, they're kind of just used to me as long as I tell them ahead of time, like, hey, this is a new design. Mm-hmm. Never tested it. Playtesters are pretty forgiving, especially if they're other designers, like, oh, okay. And then when they actually say like, oh, that wasn't terrible for it being the first time, like that feels good to hear. So I would say like in that way, I stopped doing just the writing my ideas down. I like actually forced myself to prototype it, even if it meant like losing a few hours of sleep. Just if you are hot and you have that like thought in your mind, like get it going quick.
So what's a prototype for you?
Sure. Yeah. So my game Tapas, I came up with it at the beginning of this year. Mm-hmm. Driving home, dropped my parents off at the airport in Boston. And it's like, I don't know, hour and a half drive. And it's like 6 a.m. So stupid early. And I'm driving and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so hungry. And this is, you're getting what Danielle's brain goes when she designs. So I go, oh, I'm hungry. And I was like, you know what? I've never made a food game. I should make a food game. And I was like, what kind of food do I want to eat right now? For some reason, at that early in the morning, I wanted tapas. And I was like, I haven't had tapas since I was in Spain. Like, it's kind of a cool, it's like a fancy, more expensive buffet because they're just coming around with different foods. And I was like, you know what? That would actually make a cool game. Because I mean, like if you do, I don't know, dice drafting. And I was thinking about like, oh, I played this cool one called Noctiluna, I think it was, where you roll a bunch of dice and then you draft things based off of like colors and pips. And it was like, oh, I could do something similar to that. It was just like, kept going in my head. So as soon as I got back to my apartment, even though I was dead tired, I quickly wrote down all of my thoughts on how this game is going to look, took a quick nap, came back to my computer. And so because it is COVID times, I've been testing online and I've been using Tabletop Simulator. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, since my background is graphic design, I jumped onto Illustrator and I quickly put together what I call a prototype. So I put together a board that was essentially a plate with mm-hmm. six other plates kind of attached to it. And then I created like little food tokens and put little dice and stuff. And the idea of the game was you're rolling dice and you're drafting food based off of the pips, the colors, or the bowls that are holding the food's colors. You know, I just put it together. I did the graphics, uploaded it to Tabletop Simulator, and I was playtesting it that week with the Chicago game design group that's on Discord that I run.
So that seems like a really a good natural way to get into the online testing group that you're organizing and participating in. Tell me about that group and how you got involved.
So it was one of the ones I actually found through the Meetup app. So I found mm-hmm. the Chicago Game Design Group on Meetup. So I show up and I say like, hi, my name's Danielle. Like, how does this work? And Miguel just goes, well, we all introduce ourselves. Some of us brought prototypes, some of us didn't. We'll like split up depending on player counts and how many people show up. So I just kept coming back for the Thursday meetup, and they did Thursdays and Sundays. But Miguel was like, look, honestly, I'm so stretched by going to both of these. Like, would you mind taking over the Thursday? Cause that's the one that works for you, because evenings are easier than weekends for Danielle. And I was like, yeah, like totally, I'm down, because I'm sociable and I say yes to everything. And so I kind of took that over. And eventually when COVID hit, I was the third group to go online. So I think it was like the New York one, and then Seattle, and then me, and then a bunch of other ones. And you can find them all on Cardboard Edison's website. Depending on your location, you can find one. And started that up, invited everyone who was in the Chicago group, but also just opened it to anybody. Like, it didn't matter. I actually prefer to have even more people. So I would say it's like half Chicago, half East Coast, a few West Coasters that mix in, and a few regulars, a few people that kind of just pop in and out. But it was the best way to try to stay going. Like, I had this momentum and I wanted to keep it going. So I made a group and people joined. So
is there a particular flavor to the Chicago group as compared to others that you notice, or is it similar to everyone else?
No, I would say it has a different flavor. I've been on a few podcasts talking about just like starting up an online group, but Chicago is a perfect like starter spot because it's smaller. Mm-hmm. Normally we only have like 2-3 tables running versus some of the bigger ones where you might see 10 tables running. So it's more intimate. You get to know each other better. It feels more family. Everyone is very nice. I would say the weight of the games typically are more on the like casual, like hour-ish side. Mm-hmm. So like hour and under.
For people who maybe haven't participated and are interested, what's that experience like testing a board game online?
So what you're going to do, and I actually have this on my website, if you go to dmrcreativegroup.com, there's a tab that says playtesting, and it goes through all of this. But essentially what happens is most people use Tabletop Simulator. It's run through Steam. And honestly, you can get it on some really good deals. I think I got it for like $25. It's one-time payment, which is awesome. Personally, I use it all the time. So you're going to have that downloaded. You are going to go into Google Sheets and you will type in your name, your game's name, and all the information that I ask. So like how many players, how long it'll take approximately. And that includes feedback time, because I mean, your game might last an hour, but feedback might take another 15, 20, 30 minutes sometimes, depending on how much people have to say about it. So you just fill in that. And then we have a Discord set up, and that's where we run everything. So people at the designated time, which is 7 p.m. Central Time, you drop into the lobby. We all hang out. We wait a few minutes, kind of discuss like what's going to happen. And then based off of the sign-up sheet and how many players we have, we start to break into different tables. And I would say like the tables kind of flip every hour or so.
And so for people who are a little bit new to this, perhaps, maybe explain quickly what Discord is.
So Discord is kind of like a social media platform, I would say. It's got different breakout channels where, oh my God, I almost feel like I need to pull up my Discord to explain how it works.
It's kind of like Zoom, but with chat boards and rooms that you can meet people with, right?
Yeah, yeah, because they have the different text channels. So if you were to go to the Chicago Tabletop group, you have like text channels for general, playtesting, schedule, game design, like how the group works in general. And then you have the voice chat. Like voice channels. It's just a nice way to keep information organized. The other nice thing about Chicago's group is we really are just for mostly playtesting. There are other groups that are just going to spam you with lots and lots of conversation, which if you are trying to find like a very social group, I would suggest jumping into one of those other ones. If you want just like a commitment that every other week you have a group of nice people that want to play test games, then my group is better.
So again, for people who maybe aren't familiar, you can go to discord.com. There's an app you can download to your computer. There's a mobile app you can download. I think you can even just do it in your browser if you want to. So That's a way you can get in there, type in board game, and Danielle will give us a link a little later on if you want to find the design group. But great way to maybe meet people and just get involved in a broader board game community, especially if you're looking for other people to play with.
Oh, yeah. We need more playtesters, honestly. Like, most of us are designers. So it's kind of like, okay, designer, your turn. Where I want to have more playtesters. I want game enthusiasts that are going to be the ones buying these games, Playing more.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, actually. What do you think a non-designer playtester brings to this kind of an environment?
Well, I mean, they're the ones who are buying the games. Other designers probably won't, unless it's amazing. Especially for the kind of games I'm making, I make them mostly for like the general audience or like intro gamers where they've been playing a little bit, like they've played, I don't know, Catan or Pandemic or Sagrada. They've like played a few of those more entry casual games and stuff. So it's like, I would love to know what the average Joe thinks of these games. And if the instructions make sense, like that's really big. Like if I can explain it to someone who doesn't know what different like game terminologies are. Cause like the average person doesn't know what deck builder means. Like I could say deck builder and they're like, I don't know, like stack cards, make shapes. I don't know. Or an abstract. They're just like a painting. And that way it's kind of nice to have really anybody. Cause you want to see if your game's going to work with the average person who doesn't play games, who only plays Monopoly. You want to see if the person who plays Catan will understand your game, or someone who's like a very avid gamer, which in that case, I mean, they're going to tell you what's right, what's wrong, what bothers them, what graphic design choices would make the game easier to set up or understand. I mean, any feedback is good feedback.
That's a good pitch also for the online Chicago Tabletop Design Group, right? Which is, don't be frightened. You need people there who are just willing to be there and play. They don't need to be designers. You want players.
Oh my God, yes. I mean, we typically have at least 3 new people every other week when they show up. They're just like, I'm new. And I'm like, great. I'm so happy to have you. I hope you come back next time because I want to see them again.
If you're just kind of getting started in games and if you're willing to speak your mind, it's a great way to just get exposed to, you know, the lingo, but also different types of games that you might not have ever played before.
No, I mean, I get a lot of my inspirations from published games, but also just seeing how other designers make their prototypes or even run their playtesting. Because When you go to feedback, I always suggest like have a list of questions that you're testing and do everyone a solid. And when you come back in 2 weeks or 1 week, depending on what playtest group you're a part of, make sure you've made changes, because if you come back with the exact same game with no changes and maybe one or two people have played it before, they're going to be like, well, what did you change? You need to be able to say what you've changed, because otherwise you're doing a disservice to them because they are volunteering their time to let you like make a better game. And so make sure that you are updating stuff, because I have had to talk to a few people about it before because they're just like, well, I didn't really like the feedback I got. And I was like, yeah, but then you just, you got the same feedback like 2 times in a row, maybe consider tweaking it. Like, even if it's just 1 or 2 rule changes to see if it's actually going to land, like you need to do that. You don't just like get stubborn.
So how do you personally know when you're ready to take that next step with a game?
Yeah, I mean, it's like once I've been able to continuously playtest for like a few months typically, and I'm getting similar feedback of like, oh, I really like this, or like, oh, this, like there's just little numbers you're tweaking at that point, or abilities, and it's not like anything that's going to break the game. Like the core is solid.
Once you've reached that point, do you sort of shift gears then and start thinking about marketing? Or it sounds more like you're probably thinking about it all along and it's just a continuum for you.
I think about it all along, yes. I keep a Google like Excel sheet basically set up with every tab for each different game. And I will collect publishers that I think would match my game. And so in the beginning, when I was a newbie and knew like nothing, I would go onto Gen Con's website. I would look where it has all the publishers' names. I would just click into every single one of their websites. And then most of them had the tab that's like submit a game, and it'll say what they're looking for. Otherwise, you can just go to their game page, look through the different games, see if they're similar to what you've designed, see if like the weight level or the mechanics or whatever their brand is, if it aligns with your designs. And so essentially I would do all that. And then when I'm ready to pitch, I send out the emails, or I go to their website, do the submission forms, or I get into like the speed pitching. I did that last week at Gamma. So it's like, you can apply to these different ways to pitch your games.
What is that like? What is a speed pitch?
Oh, okay. So imagine speed dating. You're nervous, you're awkward, you're ready to meet new people and try to find that perfect match. So it's the same thing. You bring your game, and there's typically about 10 publishers, and you have a certain amount of time. Maybe it's like 5 minutes, maybe it's 7 minutes. You have your game set up online right now. So how Gamma just went was I had my game on Tabletop Simulator. I had my camera going, so they got to see my face. They got to see the screen of Tabletop Simulator, and I was showing them my abstract game, Sedona Vortex. Mm-hmm. And so what I did is I just walked through the rules, kind of showed them how the gameplay worked, asked if they had any questions. But typically, as soon as I saw which publisher was popping into, it was run through Discord. So they would pop into Discord, it would say their name, and it would have their publisher name. And I would look at them and I'd be like, okay, Breaking Games, they actually do have some abstracts. So maybe they would be interested. So I could kind of gear it towards them as well. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I would know, I'm like, all right, there's no way this publisher will ever publish my game. Like, I already knew that. And so I might shorten my pitch on that. But then start asking what they're interested in publishing, what they're looking for, or if I know that I have a different game I've designed that is in a good state where I could pitch it. Mm-hmm. I could just be like, okay, so I don't think this is going to be for you, but like, I have this game called Tapas. It is a dice drafting abstract set collection game, which would fit really well in yours. Because that's the nice thing, is once you've known more about all the publishers and what they're looking for, and once you have a few more games, if you get into like a speed pitching event where you are pitching, you have a short amount of time to impress them or show something off. Don't waste that time if you know it's not going to fit like that one game. Because mm-hmm. if you have another game that might fit, a lot of times they give me their email. And they're like, oh my God, yeah, send me a sell sheet, send me a rule book, or if do you have a video, send me the video, or oh, is it on Tabletop Simulator like this one is? Let's schedule a time to play. I mean, my first game got signed doing a speed pitching, and the publisher liked it, wanted to play the game. We played the game. And then 2 days later, he was calling me and signed.
That is so awesome. What do game designers who aren't as outgoing and ready to market themselves as you, do they like hire people to demonstrate their games for them in a situation like that? I mean, obviously, if you're speed pitching your game, you probably have to be the person explaining it, but I could imagine a game designer who might also be like tongue-tied and frightened about being on camera. Do they bring in like a surrogate to demonstrate their game? I'm just curious if they do something like that.
Great questions. I actually have a blog on a pitching survival guide for back in the day when we could pitch in person. Nice. And I also had one that I wrote because I wrote that initial blog post. And then this guy messaged me on Facebook and he's like, hey, so this is great, but I have a speech impediment. Like, I just verbally cannot do that. Like, what happens if I can't do that, or I can't make it to a convention? So I wrote a second blog post of different things you can do. But essentially, yes, you can find other designers. People will post and be like, hey, I'm willing to like pitch your game for either like a charge, or you can buy, I don't know, their badge or something, and they will pitch it for you, which is cool that there are designers out there doing it. I mean, it's great for both sides, because mm-hmm. one designer has games, wants to pitch it, maybe can't afford the hotel. And so, well, if they pitch like two or three other people's designs, they all give some money. Now the hotel is covered or whatever. How I made it to conventions was I volunteered, because I'm very outgoing. I would work for different companies. They mm-hmm. would pay for my hotel, give me my exhibitor badge, and then they gave me breaks. And so during my breaks is when I would pitch my games. And that's how I did Gen Con. I would exchange of services. I'd either be playtesting the games at the booth, or I'd be like doing graphic work for them, because it made it affordable for me.
So it sounds to me like Danielle tip to people who are interested in getting involved with the gaming community is just do stuff.
Just do stuff. Say yes when they ask you. Like if they tell you, hey, like be on a board of something, say yes, do it. Hey, we need to like work on this online gaming convention and we need, I don't know, people to assist. Just say yes, do it. I mean, honestly, there are ways to get into the industry for people who don't have a lot of money, don't have a lot of time. A lot of it I write down in my like blogs or I do on podcasts. I talk about some of this stuff. But if you're willing to put forth the effort and time and you are a positive influence and willing to like pay it forward, it does a lot for you. I mean, it got me a dream job where I left Chicago. Sorry.
No offense, people. Please keep listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can do is just like keep paying it forward, keep working hard, and eventually it does pay off. Like I have a lot of friends that I've made that now they work for companies like Funko. I have two friends that got hired there because they were volunteering. They were volunteering for like different groups. They were being admins on like different Discord channels, and they were just being a positive influence and giving, putting forward into the community. And you'll start to see more of those people once you join those Facebook groups. Those are the people that move forward faster. And that's the best way to do it.
The pandemic obviously changed a lot of things for everybody in the last year. How did you find the testing experience different online as compared to in person? Because it obviously is very different.
So with testing, definitely, I would say harder in some ways because you can't really see people. So you can't see the reactions. They could be on their phone. Potentially you would never know. It's just a bunch of voices. So it's harder to connect. Also, because you are online, the game takes longer. It's much harder to know how long the game is going to play because you're going to have technical issues. You're going to have newbies that have never used Tabletop Simulator. So they don't know all the shortcuts that make the game go faster. And so there's a lot of trial and error. So in that way, harder. And then with COVID being a thing, it also, I mean, I used to play a lot of games. Right. I don't play nearly as many. I did play one today. So thankfully at my job now that we're, now that like people are getting vaccinated and we're back kind of in the office, like we have rotating shifts, we will play a game together. I will read the rule book because I'm always a designated person to read the rules. We'll just pick out one that our company is like manufactured. And we're like, let's open that up today and let's play this. And so at least in that way, I'm getting a few more. Like I think I play maybe one or two published games a week versus before, which was significantly more. You know what? You just got to go with what you can do. And I'm just happy I get to play any games because personally, I get screen fatigue because I do all my design and all my like full-time job and my freelance all on the computer and my podcast. I don't want to play online games. Like, I'm sorry. I will not play any digital published games. I played like once or twice maybe, but I just, I can't be on the computer longer than I need to. I will play test someone's game because I feel like that's a good use of my time. But the reason I loved board games to begin with is that social interaction in person. And that is what I like. So if I'm going to play a published game, that is what I'm going to do. I'm going to invite people over and we are going to play it in my apartment or at a bar or whatever.
Well, let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about your podcast because you are also a co-host of an ongoing podcast. So tell me about that. What's the name of the podcast? What's it about? How did you get started?
So I had always wanted to do a podcast. And when I got into gaming, it kind of just became a no-brainer that it needed to be about games. And my podcast is called Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. And the idea is we take one game and we unbox it and kind of just talk about what was the initial concept, how did they create the first prototype, how was playtesting, did they self-publish, did they pitch it, what did that look like, what did it entail, like what happened once it was out and about, like where is it now? So kind of just like the whole journey, the whole story arc of this one game or game series. And so I would pull on different designers. So the one that just aired was Justin DeWitt talking about Castle Panic. For anyone who hasn't played it, it's this amazing co-op game that is perfect for anyone just starting to play games. It's very easy to teach and easy to understand. But not only that, I mean, he's made like a my first Castle Panic, a kid's version. He made a Star Trek version. He made a Munchkin version. He made like a Walking Dead almost like version, like a zombie version. And so he took like this game that has been, I mean, it's becoming an evergreen at this point. It's what launched his company, and he keeps doing different variations on it and like has had expansions. Having him on this podcast is great because designers get to listen. They get to learn more about like how this designer who is well-known, who has a company now, thanks to this one particular game, like what did this guy do? What can I emulate from it? Because that's how I got better as a designer is I started to make more friends, started to kind of see what they were doing. And that's what I wanted to bring back to the community was make a podcast about that. Just find a designer to talk about one specific game or, you know, series, if they're all related, like the Trekking the World game and Trekking National Parks, like had Charlie Bink on to talk about those and his future game that he's doing. I asked Ben Moy because he and also Denise were Chicago based. I met both of them. I met Ben originally online and then he ended up in one of the game groups I got invited into. And it was so funny. He's like, oh my God, Danielle, hugs me. And I'm like, who is this guy? And then I quickly remembered from his like picture on Facebook. I was like, oh my God, yeah, we've talked on Facebook. This is funny.
That's hilarious.
And then Denise, gosh, I don't even remember. I think I met her at like a Comic-Con or something. Mm-hmm. And then she started coming to the game design groups because she was a little nerdy. And also she was in a karaoke group with my cousin, just like all the Chicago intertwine. And I asked both of them because Ben is very outgoing. He's very well known in the community and he's got like a great voice. And then you have Denise that is an avid gamer. Like every morning, just like anyone would scroll through Facebook, she's scrolling through Kickstarter. Like her collection is insane and her knowledge is just an encyclopedia.
Wow.
And so between the three of us, I thought it balanced out the crew really well, which I mean, in general, it's been great. We have officially gotten 12 episodes recorded and 11 of them have aired and we have some more guests and we've had some pretty big names on our show so far.
That's fantastic. What's been a highlight for you?
Ooh, I don't know, because every episode I'm learning something new, which is helping me become a better designer. So selfishly, it's like perfect.
In a moment, I want to get to the mini game, which is kind of my little standard stock of questions I ask people. But I'm just curious, even though you're not in Chicago anymore, if somebody in Chicago was coming to you and say like, hey, I'm new to the scene, but I'm kind of really getting into hobby gaming and I want to get involved more and more, what would your advice to them be?
I would say join some of the game design groups. Some are on Facebook, some are on Meetup, like the one that I was a part of. We ended up, because of COVID, you have to pay to stay on meetup.com. So we let that go away. We just had the Facebook group and stuff. But I know Randy still pays to have his on Meetup. So his is on Meetup. I think the one that's in DeKalb is also on Meetup.
Mm-hmm.
But so just like, honestly, Google search, go on Meetup, type in board games and find local groups is good. But just join some different Facebook groups like the Board Game Design Lab group. If you're a girl or non-binary, I mean, go on to Board Game Broads. I'm an admin there. We're very good about helping each other out. And Cardboard Edison has a website with a ton of different groups listed for different locations around the US and the world. So that's nice. Mm-hmm. So just like find your people. Chicago, especially, I mean, since you are in Chicago, like drive to Gen Con or drive to Origins, like go to some of these conventions once they open up and like hit up the Protospiels. There are so many in the Midwest. It's insane. Like go to Madison's, go to the one that's in Indianapolis, go to the one that's in Chicago itself. I mean, check that out. Randy helps, you know, run that. There's so many opportunities. If you want to get into it, it doesn't take too much Googling to find a way in. And also one of my favorite conventions, it used to be called Shytag, but now it's called POP, People of Play. So it's a conference slash kind of convention, which is more geared towards the hobby side, but I would recommend checking it out. It's always in, I believe, like November. So like right before Christmas. So if you need to do your shopping, it's a great thing to check out. And it's normally hosted in Navy Pier. So if you volunteer there, a lot of times you can like get access to go check out the conferences, which taught me a lot because they had people from like Hasbro and Goliath and Spin Master talking about their success and like hobby versus mass market. I have a game signed on both sides. They work completely differently. And I would tell everybody you should learn about each side because it is very fascinating. just how different, because people on the hobby side will sometimes stick up their nose like, oh, Monopoly. But when you think about how many games of Monopoly have been purchased and sold, and if you thought about how much money you would make if you made Monopoly, like getting that 6% or whatever off of every game, Jesus. Like, I'm sorry, I will sign my soul away to the mass market every time.
So exciting to talk to you because you are involved in so many different levels and in such a short period of time. For some reason, I thought you'd probably been doing this for longer. It's just amazing. And so
everyone
really
assumes that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you've got a lot of energy and you have been doing the work, which is really exciting. And so hopefully people listening can sort of take that as an example. I want to get into just a series of questions I call the mini game, just a quick chance to poke around your gamer brain and kind of see where you're coming from. So we'll do that, and then we'll get to the shameless promotion part of the podcast. First question for you. What is your gaming beverage of choice?
Probably just water.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, water just or tea, maybe.
Stay hydrated, huh?
I know, yeah, honestly, just stay hydrated.
No soda?
I don't really drink soda liquor? Or juice. Wow. I mean, maybe sometimes liquor, but that's only if I'm playing like party games.
Sure.
If I'm playing a hobby game, I would like to keep my brains and my wits about me.
All right. There you go. She doesn't want to mess with her reflexes.
Oh, no.
Okay. Next question then. What is your preferred number of players in a game?
Probably 3 to 4.
Okay.
Because I feel like most games I play are like a 2 to 4, and normally 2 can be kind of hit or miss. So 3 or 4 typically.
Okay. That seems to be a very popular answer so far. Okay. Next question. Tell me about a good gaming behavior that you have.
I'm willing to play any game. I don't think that can get better than that.
That's pretty good. If you're willing to play anything, that's a pretty great behavior. Okay. So the flip side, what's a bad gaming behavior that you have?
I make a lot of jokes. I don't take things seriously. So I tend to tell people that. Some people find it funny and engaging. Other people might think like, oh, she doesn't care about this. She's not serious. But that's just my personality. I make jokes on jokes. So that could be annoying for some.
So somebody having an analysis paralysis over a really hardcore strategy game may not want you as their
table
companion.
Yeah, probably not. Honestly, I don't really get analysis paralysis. I just kind of go like, huh, I'll do that. Like, I just like quick decisions.
Good for you.
Oh, it doesn't. I mean, I don't win a lot, but it works for me.
It all makes sense. It makes perfect sense. The kinds of games you like to play, all that sort of thing. All right. Well, that leads into the next question. What is a type of game that you love to play in general?
You know, that is a hard question. I like puzzly, I like set collection, and maybe worker placement might be the three that I play the most.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
All right. What's a type of game that you really don't enjoy?
Anything that's super long. So war games. Don't really play those. Don't really play miniatures or RPGs. I don't really touch any of those. Like, I will, but I wouldn't choose to normally.
Gotcha. You got 90 minutes to take Danielle's attention.
You do.
Okay. That's all right. Know your audience. Okay. Then next question. What's a physical game component that you love?
Meeples in all shapes, but especially there was a meeple that inspired one of my game designs, Curbside, which came from one of the tiny epic like zombie games. And it's like a little meeple motorcycle and a little meeple like police car that you got to put your little meeple inside of. So it was riding around. It was really cute. And so I came up with a taxi game just based off of that component because it was like, oh my God, I want this. And it just kind of kept going from there.
That's awesome. You can find inspiration anywhere, even in the humble meeple. All right. Next question then. What is a game that you own, but you haven't played?
I bought The Crew a little bit ago, and I really want to play it. I just haven't had a chance because I haven't had anyone around to play it with. I was thinking about forcing some coworkers the next few weeks to do it.
Next question then. What is a game you really want to play, but you never have?
I want to play Root. No one will ever teach me Root because they say because it's asymmetrical powers, it takes a while to like learn the game itself, let alone the different powers. So every time people wanted to play, they only wanted people who have played it before. And I've heard the app is really good, but the problem is I'm done with screens and I will not play it as an app. I will only play it in person. So I want to play Root.
So finally then, what is a game that you currently want to recommend and why?
Honestly, the one I was talking about, Castle Panic, was really solid co-op game for anyone who's new into gaming. It's awesome. You should definitely check it out. It's everywhere.
I mean, know,
they're about to
everywhere.
Have a Kickstarter for like their upgraded, nicer version of the game because they're getting new art and like miniatures. So if you want a really fancy version to play with as your first, it's coming.
May have to think about that. Thank you. Thank you for playing the minigame. I appreciate that. So let's shamelessly promote some things. Let's talk about whatever games you want to promote, your website, your podcast. I'll let you decide where to start.
Yeah. So go on my website, www.dmrcreativegroup.com. It has more of my different game designs on there, podcasts and videos that I've been a part of, as well as my blog post. So if you want that like pitching survival guide, or if you want to know how the playtesting works for the Chicago group, all of that information is there. Even more, like anyone who's involved in DMR Creative Group, they have like little bios on there. So you can check out that. And then my podcast, Game Design Unboxed, it is on, gosh, I believe it's on like Spotify, Apple. It's technically run through the No Direction Network, which is a Pathfinder-based website, I guess, and like community.
No Direction, K-N-O-W, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, you can find me on social media. On Facebook, it's DMR Creative Group. Twitter, it's Creative DMR. And then on Instagram, it's Token Gamer, and that's G-A-Y-M-E-R.
All right. Those are excellent recommendations. And any upcoming games we should be looking for at some point in the distant or not too distant future?
Innkeeper is currently in development. So, gosh, in the next year or so, we'll see that on Kickstarter.
Exciting.
And then my other game that's signed, sadly, has an NDA. So you can look for it in November when it's released as a press release, what it is and where to find it.
All right. Well, maybe we'll have you back on the podcast then. You can start talking about it.
Cool.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Danielle. This was exactly as awesome as I thought it would be because you are involved in so many things. It's just so exciting to talk to somebody who is in the thick of it in the games industry and has made it their own in such a short time. I wish you nothing but the best. Congratulations and good luck on everything you do.
Aw, thanks. I appreciate it. I hope some people get inspired to do something. Hopefully at least playtest.
Exactly. Get out there and playtest, people.
Yeah, I need you.
Okay, and that is going to be it for this week's Board Game Times. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. As always, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review it on whatever platform you found it on. Please let your friends know about it. Share the URL, boardgametimes.com. You can always find episodes there as well as on the various podcast platforms. There is also a page on Facebook. Just look up Board Game Times with an S, and you should be able to find that. Share your thoughts, share your feedback, tell your friends to subscribe. Really want to grow this into something. The whole goal here is to do more with the Chicago gaming scene, get other people involved in the community, and find ways that we can all get together, play games, and just have a great time. Until next episode, may all your board game times be the best of times. Talk to you soon.